red red light blinking? Okay. Yeah, the outtakes for the last video. We are in Perek Yud, and the sun has halted. The Jews had gone to defend Givon against the nations that attack them. The Jews have agreed to defend them, and Hashem supports the war with miracles. We had the stones, hail, whatever we want to call it exactly, is unclear. But the continuation, according to the Gemara, of the hail from Egypt falling on the enemy. And then Yehoshua requests a miracle, and he asks for the sun to stop, and apparently for the moon to stop as well. And that's what happens. The sun stops, and we noted already last time that, yes, this is extremely problematic from a physics perspective. Nonetheless, it's all wrapped up in the general, this is a miracle. Either you accept it or you don't. We're up to the question of what the timing was on this, because the psukim themselves are not clear-cut. If you take a look at the sentences in Perek Yud in chapter 10, right, it says, in Pasuk Yud Bet, sentence 12 is where Yehoshua makes this request. But there was actually something else that I wanted to see, I think, before that. No. All right. Sentence 13, Pasuk Yud Gimel, it says that Vayidom HaShemesh, the sun was silent, which we take to mean halting, as we said last time. The moon halted until the nation was able to carry out its attack on its enemies. That is recorded in Sefer HaYashar, which we have to talk about. And then it says, this is what I wanted, the sun is stood b'chatzi hashamayim. The sun is stood midway through the heavens. V'lo atz lavo, which we translate literally as it didn't hasten or it didn't hurry to set, kiyom tamim, like for a full day. And that's what our Gemara is going to pick up on. The question of, on the one hand, it stood, and on the other hand, it didn't hasten to set. It sounds like it maybe went, it just went slowly. And the first part talks about it being b'chatzi hashamayim, in the middle of the sky. But the other part of it talks about atzlava, when it is setting. So that leaves room for interpretation, and boy do we ever have interpretation. If you take a look on your sheets, and what you want is the sheet that's last week's sheet, source number 10. What I did here was to bring you the Gemara in the original, and then a table, rather than do the translations, because translating it straight makes it really unreadable. Whereas if you do it as a table, it becomes a lot more clear. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is the first of the approaches, and you can see on the table what I did with the with his view. When you see on the where it says Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the first row, and then you have the second row, that's because there are two versions of each of these opinions. So there are six opinions altogether.
Each person had two opinions.
Well, you'll see why. Yeah, you'll see why. But when it says, for the first one, six, 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 and six, what it means is the sun ascended into the sky for 6 hours, stopped for 6 hours, moved for 6 hours, stopped again for 6 hours before proceeding. And that's true for each of these numbers that you see here, starting, stopping, and so on. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, Esrim v'arba ashayi. He says the whole thing took 24 hours. From the time that the sun rose until it went on its way. Azil shis, it moved for 6 hours, become shis, and then it halted for six. Azil shis, it moved for six, become shis, and then it stopped for six. Kula milsa kiyom tamim, the entire thing was a complete day. So what he's basing it on, and I gave you the pasuk there on the top line of the table, is the fact that it says this was kiyom tamim, a full day. So he's explaining it in a very minimal way. A full day means from the beginning of the story until the end of the miracle. Rabbi Lazar Amar, and by the way, obviously, I think it's obviously, it takes 12 hours to move through the sky. We're not talking about hours as 60-minute hours. We're talking about what we call sha'ot zmaniyot, which are defined as 1/12 of the daylight period. Whatever daylight is, it's 1/12 of that. So 12 sha'ot zmaniyot will necessarily be the complete daylight period. So in his view, pretending that the sun was rising at 6 a.m. and setting at 6 p.m. It moved until 12. At 12, it stopped. Vayamod Hashemesh b'chatzi ha-shamayim. It stood in the middle of the sky. Then it continued, right? But then it didn't hurry to set. V'lo atz lavo. It didn't hurry to set because it stopped again for 6 hours right before sunset. And that whole thing was kiyom tamim, a complete day.
But how does he get this? What is his reasoning for that?
Where does he get six? Is because it took, because the first halting is chatzi ha-shamayim, midway through the sky. So that's 6 hours to get there, and then if it's stopping before sunset, it's another 6 hours to get there. Yeah.
They all seem to be multiples of 6 and 12, right? So that's why, because of the chatzi, right?
Exactly. Well, we'll see.
Okay.
Almost exactly. But that's the idea. Barbanel notes that in general they want the pauses and the movings to be equal. So if it moved for six, it stopped for six. But also because he wants to reach Yom Tamim, this complete day, so he needs to get to 24.
24.
But if this is recorded, well, I don't know what the Sefer HaYashar is. Did someone record the details of what happened? Like, wouldn't that be interesting to know what the,
Well, the details that we have are the ones that are in Yehoshua, they were probably clear to the, to the original reader who knew what he was describing. But afterwards, this becomes insufficient. And that's what leads to all of this. What the Sefer HaYashar is, we have to get to. But hopefully, we won't need to spend the whole time on the math. We'll get through the math. And then we'll be able to find out about Sefer HaYashar. So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi has satisfied the various aspects of the Pasuk. Rabbi Elazar amar shloshim b'shis. Rabbi Elazar says, no, the whole thing is 36 hours. Where do you get that? Azel shis. It goes for 6 hours first to reach Chatzi HaShamayim, right? Now it's the middle of the sky. Vikam Tresar. Then it halts for 12. Azel shis. It goes another 6 hours to the sunset position. Vikam Tresar. And then it halts for 12. Why? Why do that?
Adding 24 hours is a halting time.
Right. Amidaso. Yeah. Well, Amidaso ki yom tamim. It's halting for a full day.
So they realized that the whole thing together was the full day.
Exactly.
The guy's doing it was stopping.
Right.
I like the stop.
Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amar Arboim Ushmona. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani says, no. It's actually 48 hours. Where'd you get that? Azil Shis, it goes for 6 hours to reach midway point in the sky. Vikam Tresar, and then it halts for 12 hours. Why, we'll come back to in a second. Azil Shis, it goes for another 6 hours, so that it gets the sunset position. Vikam Esum Verba, and it halts at that point for 24. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, Velo Atz Lavo Kiyom Tamim. It did not hurry to set for a complete day, so it's 24 hours at the end. Michlal Demeikara Lav Kiyom Tamim Hava, which means that the first halt was not 24 hours. The first halt had to have been shorter than the 24. So that's how he gets this. Abarbanel explains further that that what he is suggesting. Should I make sure?
Isn't it? You did 6-12-6-12. This should be 6-12-24 as opposed to 6-12-6-12.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What I did on there, 6-12-6-12. Yeah, why did I have?
Why did the extra 6-12?
Well, let's do the math.
It's
supposed to be 48.
It would only be 42 if you don't, right? So.
Hang on. 6 and 12, so 18.
I think it's 6-12-24.
Yeah, I don't know why I put in the extra 12 in there. That's a mistake. I'm looking at my notes here to see what Abarbanel did, because I think I pulled it off of Abarbanel.
6-12-6-24, from what I see.
Yeah.
So you're saying it went for 6?
Yeah, no, I'll tell you why I said it.
For 12?
Abarbanel is the one who does this. Okay. Abarbanel is the one who I pulled this from, but yeah, I don't see how it fits with his wording, so I must have misunderstood Abarbanel. No, leave it at this.
48.
Yeah, no, it works with the math. I have to go back and read Abarbanel, because he was the one who I read to say that, and I don't think it's right. So we'll have to see. But that's his idea, is that the first halt is not 24 hours, because only the second one is.
So why 12?
Yeah, and again, I need to go back to Abarbanel and see what he did, because he would be...
That.
No, I think I'm missing something in terms of why the first halt is a 12-hour halt. There's a reason for it.
The first six make sense. The second six make sense. And the 24 make sense. But why the 12?
Yeah. No. All right. So offhand, I don't know. I have to go back through it and find out. Okay. We're not even done. That's all the first set.
Yeah. Now
they get
another opinion.
Yes. Ika de Amri. Some said that actually Bitosefta Pligi, that the debate between them was about how long the halts were. Not the sum of everything, but how long the halts were. Meaning, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Amar Asim ve'arba, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said 24, just like we said before. He says 24. But 24 is the halting time. So Azil Shis become Tresar, Azil Shis become Tresar. It's 24 hours. When it says Velo Atz Lavo Kiyom Tamim, that means it didn't hasten to set for 24 hours of stopping. 12 plus 12. That's one. Then that's the first view. Rabbi Lazar Amar Shloshim Veshesh. Rabbi Lazar says 36 hours, and the way he has it is Azil Shis Vikam Tresar, it went 6, stopped for 12. Azil Shis Vikam Esum V'arba, and then it went 6, and then it stopped 24, and the extra 12 you should get rid of in there. That's just because I copied and pasted his view from Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani before, because they have the same position of the 36 hours of halting. But the idea that he is trying to suggest when he does this is still the same idea as before in terms of what drives it, that the fundamental idea is still
the setting is the
24 there, because it didn't set for a full day, right? And then Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Arba Mushmona, he's got 48. Azel Shis V'kam Esum V'arba, Azel Shis V'kam Esum V'arba. Goes for 6, stops 24, goes for 6, stops for 24. Makish Amidaso Lebiaso. We link the halting, of it, meaning in the middle of the sky, with the setting. Mabiaso Kiyom Tamim, when it's set, it took 24 hours. Afamidaso kiyom tamim. So too, when it stood midway through the sky, that was also 24 hours. That's where he gets it.
So should it be 24? The 24s, both times in that one are still the setting, no?
Yes.
So,
well, where do they even,
like? I guess what I'm saying to you is, it says it's equating the standing and the setting, but
right,
according to the way it's...
But it is. It's equating the two halts. The halt that's in the middle of the sky, and the halt that's at the end.
Oh, I see. Like, okay.
Yeah, I really should have written equating the two halts.
But that's like two yom tamims, really, if you have to literally, like...
Yes.
So that's what he's saying?
Yes.
That's his view.
That's exactly his view.
Okay.
Yeah. Add to this, of course, Radak, that we saw last week, who had this whole other view about it halting on Friday.
For 36.
That was a whole other, piece of this. And actually Malbim has yet another view. I didn't bring it on here. I guess I had mercy. But Malbim seems to present yet another view. He says that there was a halt of a Yom Tamim, a complete 24-hour cycles halt, so that... Oh, I remember why I didn't bring this, because it was weird. So that it would get back to its earlier point. That was the issue. The concern was that it should get back to its earlier point, because what he suggests is that the annual revolution of the Earth around the Sun was not halted, only the rotation of the Earth, which would produce day-night cycles.
So you wouldn't lose a day.
Calendar. Have to get back on track. Like, this day never happened.
If the Sun and the Earth are geosynchronous. Mm-hmm. Which is really, it's really that the Earth is heliosynchronous, I suppose. That's the idea. In the same way that with the Moon, right? The Moon doesn't rotate at this point. At one point it did, but it doesn't rotate. The same part of the Moon is always the part that's facing towards us, right? It's not like the darker side of the Moon is shifting. It's always the same position. So that's what he's envisioning happens with the Earth. That the Earth is actually keeping in sync with everything else that's out there. It's just that it stops rotating. So that's the Yom Tamim halt. It loses 24 hours of rotation, and then it just resumes.
But you didn't lose a day in the calendar of the
world. Of the year, correct. The seasons are all in sync. Yeah.
You didn't mess up anything else.
Yes.
When were these guys alive? Sorry, when Galileo, like, was this after all the scientific theories came out? Like, you know, are they aware of
which?
I mean,
they're long before, you know, Galileo, Copernicus say that the Earth goes around the Sun.
Correct. That's my
not Malvin. Malvin is after.
Right. So these guys.
But the Gemara is before. They were as long before that.
So they
didn't
have any knowledge, technically. Like, they're
well,
just
they have
a miracle, but they don't really understand it.
They have plenty of astronomical knowledge. Okay. They're missing key pieces, but they have plenty of astronomical knowledge, meaning they know the world is round. It's
okay,
a myth.
Yeah.
It's a myth to say that until Columbus comes along, people
that's
believe
it.
That the Earth is flat. Okay. They teach you that in, like, kindergarten and,
yeah.
you know. Yeah.
So that, they knew that.
That's
okay.
Well,
but so they know the Earth is round. They have a very good sense of the calendar and how it works, and the Earth's the cycles of the seasons. That they're up on. Beyond that, they have a vision of cosmology that's kind of very different from our own in terms of the spheres and yeah, that's where it kind of diverges from where we are.
To be more accurate.
What Malvin is presenting is solves certain problems. If I know that we are floating in space and we have all these other, you know, bodies that are out there that we have to deal with, then yes, it's more comfortable to say, you know, to say the Malvin approach from that perspective, I suppose. The problem, and he also, I think, is solving a problem which he doesn't mention, which is that after the Malvin, we're told that the seasons will never halt. So you have to honor that somehow. They have to keep on, you know, floating through space. The problem is that if he's doing this in order to solve physics problems, he's only created more. Because realistically, he's now claiming that one type of centrifugal force is going, right? We are still on our route around the sun, but the rotation of the Earth has stopped. That doesn't. You've explained certain things and not others. I'd rather that you just said, forget it, the whole thing was a miracle, and, you know, move on. As opposed to, you're going to solve for this particular scientific problem when it just wreaks havoc with all the other scientific problems. Every once in a while, I get emails from people who listen to the Shiurim online. And or I suppose maybe watch them on Kosher too. And they mention, like, that they listen to this and some scientific issue came up and they then write to me to explain the so hopefully
actually understand it and they know it.
Well, they're dealing with a particular issue in the Shiur that they specialize in. So
maybe we're not supposed to explain it. That's what we always try to explain.
Well, we're gonna get to that question actually. Maybe today, I'm not sure. We'll get to that in the Rambam actually.
That's also like when you said, why did Yeshua even say this to begin with? He had also at that point no knowledge probably of how things worked.
I don't know what he knew.
You know, right? Like he probably.
I don't know what he knew.
What he thought when he said the sun should stay still, like he. You know.
Don't know.
Yeah.
Do not know. It is entirely possible to argue. There's a pasuk, Sod Hashem li Re'av. God's secrets are given to those who revere Him, and from that we understand that. The figures in Tanakh had information that God simply told them. That was beyond what anybody normally would have. So maybe he knew. I see nothing in the text that says that I have to think he did know. But who knows? I don't know. Which brings us to the question of the moon. We already asked this question last week. Yehoshua wants the war to continue. So he wants added daylight. And by the way, we still have to get to Ralbag, who's going to say none of this happened. So that's still coming. That's the added sheet that I had sent out that you have that we'll have to go through. Ralbag says none of this happened. But we'll get there.
How much more of a war was there? Didn't the hail take out almost everybody?
The hail took out more people than they took out by sword. But we don't know numbers. Apparently, not enough. Otherwise, yes, this wouldn't be necessary. But we asked the question last week of why Yehoshua mentions the moon. He wants to stop the sun because he wants to continue the war. But what does the moon figure into any of this? So according to Radak, who we saw earlier, Radak had this idea that it was about, you know, halting Shabbos, and therefore he wanted the sun and the moon to halt, and that was one idea. Barbanel seems to give us two other ideas. If you take a look at source number 11, is first, in two different places he says things which I believe address the point regarding the moon. In the first one he writes, V'lo hispalel ela sheyatmid or hayom ad hayosam be'emek ayalon. He only prayed, Yeshua only prayed, that the light of day should continue until they would be in Emek Ayalon. In other words, we are running after the enemy. When we reach Emek Ayalon, we still want there to be sunlight. That's the goal. Vizehu v'yareach be'emek Ayalon. And that's what he means when he says, the moon in Emek Ayalon, Rotzelomar, meaning, v'yareach yidom, ad heyot Yisrael be'emek ba'oso gvul me'ayalon. Effectively, you have to read the sentence as Shemesh be'givon dom v'yareach be'emek ayalon. Let the sun stop in Givon and the moon until we are in Emek Ayalon. That's the idea that he's suggesting. And then according to that, you don't have to say that this was close to sunset at all, because those who said it was close to sunset in part did that because the moon has to be up, or else what's Yeshua talking about when he asked the moon to stop? So the answer is that the moon was, according to him, all Yeshua was saying was, sun, moon, wait for us to get to Emek Ayalon. That's one approach. The other approach is what you see here in source number 12, is another quote from Abarbanel. He says, V'ra'a ha-shemesh yored li'kaneis tachas ha'aretz b'nochichiyut givon. He saw the sun starting to descend towards the earth in the area of Givon. V'etchila ha'levana l'heira'ot olam en ha'aretz b'emek ayalon. He saw the moon start to ascend from the ground in Emek Ayalon. So according to this, it is, in fact, getting closer to sunset. Yeshua davened for the moon to stop because he didn't want the movements of the heavens to be entirely corrupted and confused. Meaning, if the sun stops and the moon keeps on going,
and they're like,
well, right. V'yan e'efshar l'shnei melachim l'shtamesh b'keter echad. He quotes you the Gemara about the sun and the moon and how originally in creation the Pasuk says Hashem is going to create two luminaries. But then it says he creates one large one and one small one. What happened? So you're familiar with the Medrash about it, that the message for us that we draw from it is that competition in general is going to cause hard feelings. You can't set up a position in which you put the sun and the moon in the sky at the same time. That's gonna create problems. You can't have two kings using the same crown. And so what he does is he says, well, you can't have them in the sky at the same time. You can't have the moon go up while the sun is still in the sky. So therefore he says, let the moon stop also. However, when they actually halt, if you go back for a second to Pasuk Yud Dalid, right? Yeshua's request mentioned the moon. But in Yud Gimel, I should say, when they stop, right, Yud Gimel, it only mentions the sun stopping. It doesn't mention the moon stopping. So he continues to say, Abarbanel, back in number 12, V'ine lo zachar hayareach v'pasuk v'yamod ha-shemesh. He didn't mention the moon in the pasuk of the sun stopping. L'fi shalo ba ki'im la'hagid shahaya ha-shemesh mimal la'ofek v'lo nishka tahtav. Because all he wanted to say was that the sun remained above the horizon and didn't set. The moon wasn't really necessary for this. The moon was, well, we don't want to corrupt things too badly, and we don't want the sun and the moon in the sky at the same time, but that wasn't the point for him.
It says so right after, Vayareach Amad. Vayidom
Hashemesh. No, it's the second part of the Pasuk. Vayamod Hashemesh at the end.
Yeah, in the beginning it does, but then when it describes Vayamod Hashemesh, Vatzi Hashemayim, suddenly it doesn't mention it. V'od ki me'achar she'yih ha'isam b'tiacheses elav b'tnu'a sa'a, hine ma'shnemar b'shemesh me'hesek ha'tnu'a yadanu she'agam kin b'yareach. He makes the further point that the moon is linked with the sun in terms of its movement. And so when you say the sun stopped, the moon must have stopped also. What that means to Abarbanel, I don't really know. Meaning Abarbanel is last decade of the 15th century, first decade of the 16th century in terms of when he's writing this. So he's late, but not necessarily late enough
after Malvin
to know. Malvin? Oh, Malvin is late. Malvin is 18th century. The 18th, maybe even into 19th. I don't remember for sure. But what really matters, I think, is the fact that I think he's pre Copernicus. I believe. Let's check that.
I don't know when I own
one. Right. No, I believe, but I'm about to prove choice. Myself either right or wrong.
I'm trying to learn Copernicus.
There we go. Yeah, Copernicus is 1473 to 1543.
Okay.
And he publishes his model late in his life. So, after Abarbanel has already written this. So Abarbanel just may not know how the moon is.
But were these rabbis, would they, I should say modern Orthodox, would they learn from these philosophers?
So Abarbanel certainly would. I mean, what happened when Copernicus came out is actually interesting in its own right. And I actually saw recently a write-up that there were those who were willing to accept it, and there were those who rejected it. Surprise. But
your very, very religious types would not want to science versus, you know.
It's not a function necessarily of how religious one is, as much as what one's perspective is on science in general, and in particular when it's demanding that you now go back to certain biblical psukim and say, well, now I have to explain these differently because clearly the way I understood it was wrong if this science is correct. Like, there are various psukim that seem to paint it as though we are the center of things. They don't have to be read that way, but they sound like it. But now you have to go back and reread it. That's what got the church all upset, or one of the things that got the church all upset. But the we had some who were more open, and we had some who were less open. Okay, but Abarbanel would have been among those who have been more open, just based on his general approach. He has no problem. He hasn't done it in Yehoshua that I've noticed. But when we did Daniel 2 years ago in the Tuesday class, like he regularly quoted Christian scholars to explain verses or compare what they said with what we said, and yeah, he deals with that without much of a problem.
I mean, the Rambam also, he was very
good. Yeah. Whether he would have agreed or not is another story, but he definitely would have learned it and quoted it. Yeah. Okay. So that's in terms of the moon. So now we have a basic idea that the sun is halting, apparently halting twice, right, in the middle of the sky, and then again before setting. Period of time subject to debate. The moon is along for kicks or to keep the skies consistent. And then it's all written up in Sefer HaYashar. So what is Sefer HaYashar? Well, I'm glad you asked. If you take a look at source number 13, Gemara and Avodah Zarah, same passage of Gemara that discussed what we saw before in terms of the length of time that things stood. We're going to actually end up quoting it again eventually regarding when the sun stopped for Moshe. But right now, the Gemara is trying to explain this thing called Sefer HaYashar, which is referred to not only in Yehoshua, but also later on in Tanakh and Shmuel Bet. So the Sefer HaYashar is referred to in both places, and this Gemara is going to be bringing both, as you'll see. What is Sefer HaYashar? And this is the Sefer HaYashar that we have here. So Rabbi Chiya bar Abba quotes Rabbi Yochanan. I'm Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Zeh Sefer Abraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. It is the book of Abraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, because Shenikra'u Yisharim, they are called Yisharim, meaning those who are righteous. Shenamar, and they quote the pasuk regarding Bilam, Tamos Nafshi Mos Yisharim. Bilam says that he wishes he would die the death of the righteous. He means that of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So their book is called Sefer HaYashar. Now, what is their book? What is the book of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? Gracious, right? We generally understand, and you'll see why in a moment, that it's not the Torah in broad, but rather it is gracious specifically. As a matter of fact, the Nitziv, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, in his Hamek Davar commentary to Chumash, in his introduction to gracious, has a very nice essay in which he talks about the book being called Sefer HaYashar, the Book of the Righteous, and the importance of honesty. It's a good essay, short and very worth reading.
How could this have been written in favor of gracious?
Ah, So that's the question. It says this was written in Sefer HaYashar. So where in the world in Bereishis? Well, where in Bereishis does it refer to the sun stopping? So could it be creation? The Gemara gives a different answer. V'heicha remiza. So where is this hinted in Sefer Bereishis? And he quotes the pasuk regarding Ephraim. When Yaakov gives his bracha to Ephraim and Manasseh, he says regarding Ephraim, Vizaro yehem melo hagoyim. His seed will fill the nations. His descendants will fill the nations. So, Emos hayehem melo hagoyim. When do Ephraim's descendants fill the nations? Bishasha amdalo chamali Yoshua, when the sun stands for Yoshua. In other words, his reputation. Everybody hears about it because the sun stops. That's the hint. When Ephraim's descendant ends up being the fill of the nations. Now, this is one of, this is hang on, because you're missing, because you're going about it backward. I'll tell you why in a second. Not your fault, but except Alina, it's your fault because you were in the Midrash here last year. You saw this often enough. A Midrash often is not commenting on the pasuk you think it's commenting on. Very often, what a Medrash is doing is it's solving a problem somewhere else. And then we borrow it, you know, on this Pasuk, but it's actually not about our Pasuk. This Medrash here, this piece of Gemara, is a Medrash in and of itself, that we're reading, is actually a drasha not on Yehoshua and Sefer HaYashar. It's a drasha on the bracha of Ephraim. Yaakov gives Ephraim a bracha, saying his descendants are going to fill the nations. And the Medrash says, well, when did that ever happen? When do we see any of Ephraim's descendants being the fill of the nations? And their answer is Yehoshua. Because, as we read here in Sefer Yehoshua, everybody hears about him, and everybody is awed, and they're all talking about this tremendous miracle. So, what this Medrash is trying to do is, it's coming from the opposite direction. Zaro Yem Elo HaGoyim refers to Yehoshua, who stopped the sun. So now, when I have... to take it the other way, when I have a pasuk that says, or when I have a medrash, I should say, that says that Sefer HaYashar mentions the halting of the sun, I'm going to tie it to a pasuk which I've already established as describing Yehoshua. You follow? It's the other way around. The pasuk
wasn't created to support, but you're using it to support it.
Exactly. Anyway. Exactly. I'm sorry. I should have done that. It's a classic Medrash method.
I also had issues last year in the shir too with the Medrash. Like sometimes I find it's very
it's like a back door.
Medrash is more literal,
like the wording, like as opposed to the concepts behind.
Correct, and that's exactly the point. Medrash is not about logic. Medrash is about language. You heard me say that often enough. Medrash is about language. It's about words that are weird, references that are not clear in a pasuk. Words that are spelled wrong, and trying to understand what am I supposed to draw out of that, and coming up with a solution which fits all the various anomalies. But if I were to look at it coming at it from the outside, storyline wise, I would look at it and say, "What are you talking about?"
That's exactly right. What are they telling us this anyway? Why do we need to be told? This is what happened. This is what happened. Why do we need to be told? And it's also written.
You know, you're asking about in Yehoshua, why are they telling us that it's recorded in Sefer HaYashar?
I don't know. You better believe it because it's recorded
somewhere. Well, no, I think what you're asking is a very important question, especially though...
Maybe they realize that, like, people are going to be like, really? That happened?
Well, that's not going to make them trust it more. It depends on what Sefer HaYashar is. But it depends on what Sefer HaYashar is.
Don't make it sound beforehand, like, oh, it's recorded there.
But now it's not.
But now it's not.
Within this view of Sefer HaYashar, what we're saying is it was predicted in Bereishis.
I understand that.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Our question is, what have you done by saying it's in Sefer HaYashar? And my answer will be that within this view of Sefer HaYashar, what you've done is you've anchored it in Chumash. And what you've said is, this isn't just something that happened in Yehoshua, but this was actually built in from the beginning, going all the way back to Ephraim and Manasseh and Yaakov.
This was predestined.
Yes. Yes.
Don't they say certain miracles were done at the time of Rashi? Isn't there some Rashi like that?
There's the Rambam.
The Rambam. Someone
yes.
Said that.
Rambam's school of thought on miracles, that everything is built in from the beginning.
Correct, right.
Yes.
Well, that's right along with it.
It also fits in with Pirkei Avos and the whole idea of certain miracles being from the beginning, that certain things were prepared from the 6 days of Bereshis. So that's one view of Sefer HaYashar. And then the Gemara goes into a side note, which is actually one of the other pieces from the same page that we're quoting here. But then the Gemara comes back to Sefer HaYashar, noting that in Shmuel Bet, we have a pasuk, this is after Shaul dies, that Vayomer Lamei Bnei Yehuda Keshet, David HaMelech, King David, said to teach the people of Shevet Yehuda the bow, how to become archers. He makes Suval Sefer HaYashar, and that's recorded in Sefer HaYashar. So the Gemara wants to know once again, what is Sefer HaYashar? My Sefer HaYashar. So Amar Bechia Bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan. The first answer, Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Kun Rabbi Yochanan, the same answer that we saw before, is that it's actually from Bereshis. And then he proves, quotes a verse from Bereshis that predicts that the people of the tribe of Yehuda will be archers. I didn't bring it here because it's not germane for our discussion. Then we get a second answer for what it is. Rabbi Eliezer says it's actually Sefer Devarim. Sefer Devarim is what's called Sefer HaYashar, and the reason why it's called Sefer HaYashar is because that includes the instruction Vasisa HaYashar VeHatov. You should do that which is Yashar, that which is righteous. So according to that, Sefer Devarim is also where this potentially is predicted. And there's discussion about what it is, and the Barbanel brings it, and so on. I didn't go through the individual pasuk for each one. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni says, is this Sefer Shoftim? He says, no, it's actually Sefer Shoftim. And that is a radical switch, going back to our question of what you're accomplishing by saying this. If I take the first two views, so it was predicted back in Chumash, Shoftim is after Yehoshua. So what it's saying is, this is, in fact, recorded not only in the older books, but it's in Sefer Shoftim.
That's actually better. If that is after the event, instead of recording it before the event.
Well, it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. If you're trying to show, look, there are other records of this, then yes. If that's your goal, then that serves your goal. If your goal isn't that, if your goal is to say that this is something that actually was built in all the way back in Chumash, then I'm better off making it earlier.
Right.
I mean, it depends on what your goal is.
But then to say it was recorded is like a strong word when it's just hinted to back in Chumash.
Well, the text is ksuva. It's written. I translate it as recorded because I don't like written. Recorded is a better word. But
you expect to see it written like in Divrei HaYamim. Really like something, like where it actually hinted. Says it. Like,
well, what's the difference between writing it in Divrei HaYamim? I would take Yehoshua over Divrei HaYamim. Yehoshua is written, much earlier. Divrei HaYamim is written in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash.
But what I'm saying is a proof. Like, I want to see it written somewhere else. I thought I was going to see it somewhere else written that the sun stood still. Not that.
So hang in there.
Not that I mean. Brian was supposed to fill the world.
Right, like, that indirect thing is more hard to understand.
Right. Well, we have more to see within this, so let's see a little bit more first, and then come back to the question. If you take a look at source 14, Abarbanel offers us yet another view, after going through all of these views. He says, V'achshov ani, he says, I think, she'yachzor l'nekama she'zachar, she'yisrael be'atzmo yikom me'oyvav. He says, the truth of the matter is that I think that what we're talking about here with this Sefer HaYashar is not about the halting of the sun and the moon. Rather, it's about what Hashem does in general to their enemies on that day. The miracle of the hail, the whole bit, is what's recorded in Sefer HaYashar. And what he says is, Ba'amar sha'osan ha'kama ha'yosana ha'seis al yadam, u'bekamach oso ha'neis hashmimi. He says, the idea that they would perform this attack on their enemies via the miracle, the celestial miracle, Hine Moshe Rabbeinu b'sefer ha'Torah, shehu ha'sefer ha'yashar, ye'ed aleha. This was predicted by Moshe in the Torah, which is Sefer HaYashar. Ki ra'a oso b'nevuaso, because Moshe saw it prophetically, uzchuso imkein si'ala hanes, and his merit aided in the miracle. And that's another reason why you'd want to say it's in Sefer HaYashar, to connect it back to Moshe, and say Moshe predicted this, and he is the one who earns this. And that's going to matter a great deal. We won't get to see why today. That'll be in next week, I hope. But he says that's the idea, is that it's predicted in the Torah, not sun and moon halting, but the general victory. The Yi is Eba Parshas Vizos HaBracha. Where is this in Chumash? In Vizos HaBracha. Ba'amro Ein Kakel Yishurun Rochev Shemayim Be'ezrecho Gavaso Shechakim ... Ve'egarshim Panecha Oyev Ve'yomer Hashmed. When the Psukim talk about Hashem being mighty in the heavens and chasing away the enemies. So that has the heavens component to it and the chasing away of the enemies. So Abarbanel's view is that it's the Torah in general as the book of the Yashar. We are done. The Malbim, in source number 15, says that it's Torah also, but he brings a different source for it. He says, "Eis ra'a Yehoshua ki Hashem nilcham lahem be'emori." When Yehoshua saw that Hashem fought the Amori on their behalf, Ratza sheimalei Hashem es habris shakaras im Moshe asher nechtav b'sefer hayashar. Yehoshua asks Hashem to halt the sun and the moon because he wants Hashem to fulfill the covenant he made with Moshe in the Torah, which is sefer hayashar. La'asos lehem neis galui umufursam, to perform an open and public miracle for them. What he's referring to, I didn't bring you the whole quote.
Isn't that everything that he did? That's the crossing the Yarden.
Except for the pasuk that he's building on, which I didn't bring you, because I didn't bring the whole quote. But the pasuk that he's talking about when he says the covenant Hashem made is when Hashem says to Yehoshua, "Neged kol amcha e'esen iflaos asher lo nivru b'chol ha'aretz u'b'chol ha'goyim." I'm going to perform a miracle opposite your entire nation for everybody to see, miracles that never happened before in any land among any nation. So it has to be something, you know, otherworldly. It has to be something that's beyond any scale that anybody's familiar with. And so that's what he says. Yehoshua says, okay, this is the time for God to fulfill this. I'm going to ask him for something that's, you know, way off the charts. That's the idea.
Why is it a covenant with Moshe?
Because Hashem says it to Moshe directly, it's even Moshe's merit, yeah.
Oh, and his merit, even though he won't be there to see it.
Correct. So that's
does Yehoshua know that?
That what? That Hashem said it to him?
Yeah.
He never left Moshe's tent.
Okay.
Yeah. So another is what we've seen then is the Gemara linking it to Sefer Hayashar and suggesting Sefer Hayashar could be various books within Chumash or Shoftim. We have Abarbanel and Malbim saying it's Torah in general. And then we have Ralbag. And Ralbag, there's a very brief comment. V'hine, Sefer Hayashar achshov shehaya nikra kach ve'avadim hagalut. They had a book. It was called Sefer Hayashar. We don't have it anymore. It's the Dead Sea Scrolls. It was a book. It was called Sefer Hayashar. So that's what you were looking for, Alina. Right, so Ralbag is 14th century. He is earlier.
Oh, he's earlier than Abarbanel.
Earlier than Abarbanel, earlier than Malbim, yes.
Okay.
Maybe he
does remember that there. Yeah, maybe it was passed down.
Oh no, that's not what he's doing.
Did he just make this up
because
he didn't want to?
So yeah, no, I was wondering. He doesn't quote any evidence, but what he's saying, essentially, what he's really saying, I believe, what drives this is that if it wanted to say it was in Torah, like Chumash, it would say Sefer Torah Moshe, which we've used to refer to the Torah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like we know what Torah is. Why do you use a code name? So I think that's what's driving this. Ralbag in general is a minimalist. He doesn't like to provide these kinds of other approaches.
He's saying it's not so significant because it's not.
Well, not that it's not so significant, but he's simply saying, yeah, the pasuk says it was recorded in Sefer Hayashar. They had a book called Sefer Hayashar, and Yehoshua is alluding to that, and we don't have it anymore.
Is one more point of chat, maybe? Like, is he just?
Yeah, I mean, Ralbag in general is pshat oriented. He likes things that fit the story, not things that fit the language. That's that's definitely his approach. Okay, we still have to resolve Pasuk Yedaled, which talks about how there was never anything like this before or after, and whether that's really so. What exactly was it that was unique? But right now, at least for today, we've accomplished Pasuk Yud Gimel.
Wow. Wow, we're moving along.
That's an achievement.
Pretty good.
That's an achievement. don't worry, once we finish this story, and we're going to do like, you know, two prakim a day as we go through the geography and the wars and all that. So
you'll be able to learn
past this part. Yes. Well, now you know why.
Right.
You can, yes. All right. We'll pick up with that guttling next week. We understand the weird.